Hi, I'm LaFern Cusack, senior producer here at Promax PDA, and this is the Daily Brief Podcast. Ron Hayes, executive vice president on air marketing and digital at NBC, said, "If they give you a job that not everybody else can do, that's your opportunity to make your mark." This is the thinking that has inspired Hayes throughout his 27 years at NBC. According to him, your personal brand is an influential decision maker when it comes to your career growth. Whether you're an up-and-comer or a seasoned veteran like Ron, you still have to make your mark. In this interview with Daily Brief's contributing editor, Kareem Taylor, Hayes talks about how to polish your personal brand, the formula he uses for creating spots that work, and what it's like to reboot Will and Grace, a show he originally launched. Let's check it out.
I'm sitting here with Ron Hayes, EVP on-air marketing and digital. You've been at NBC since November of 90, so you've been here for a while. How'd you get here?
I was working at a local TV station, Channel 13 KCOP, and I decided, I'd been there 5 years and decided it was time for me to go. And so I applied for two jobs, I guess. I saw a listing in Variety that NBC was looking for somebody, and I also had a friend at KTTV at the time, and they were looking for somebody. And I lucked out, and I got two job offers at the same time. And I was actually, believe it or not, I took both of them because they were both freelance and I was terrified of being out of work. So I worked from NBC at NBC from 8 a.m. until 3 p.m. And then I worked, I quickly drove over the hill and I worked the rest of the evening till about 11 at KTTV, writing, you know, the "What You Don't Know Can Kill You" news teases, tune in at 10 and see what that is. And so I did both for about 4 months. And I think they just liked me better at NBC. I think I wasn't as good at writing the news. Local news is, you know, it's about fires. It's about, you know, assaults. It's about if it bleeds, it leads. And so, you know, at the time there was this Gulf War, and I wrote, you know, a tease about, you know, will Bush push Saddam Hussein out of Kuwait? And the editor kind of rightly looked at me like I was a complete idiot and said, "Why would you do this? There's a warehouse fire downtown. There's some guy threw a puppy down. You know, there's all kinds of better things to put in this tease than what you have." And so I think the decision kind of made itself, and I ended up getting offered a job at NBC a few months later, a staff job rather, and, you know, they haven't been able to chase me out yet.
You did an interview where you said that your advice to young people was start with passion, be passionate about what it is that you're doing. Is that what you had and have continued to have?
Well, you know, I think that, first of all, yes, I think that people work better when they have a passion about them, when there's a fire about them. And my sense is that you need to kind of find both the fun and the drive in everything that you do, and it'll make you better at what you do, as opposed to, you know, kind of going, "Well, that's another thing that I have to do." And so, you know, for a lot of people, it's fairly simple. They look at every opportunity that comes along as an opportunity to polish their brand, to you know, make a build on their reputation. And I think there are worse ways of looking at a job. I think, you know, your passion, some people are lucky to be able to choose their passion and let it direct them. But I think the majority of us are in a position where we are given our assignments or given our projects or given the work that we are, you know, that we are lucky enough to find. And we have to find an aspect of it that gets us really excited and motivates it. Because, you know, everybody in this business has to work really hard, long hours in order to survive in the job. And if you're really engaged in it, then the time goes by very quickly and you really, you know, you don't even notice it. And if you're bored, then, you know, first of all, you probably won't last very long and you probably won't work as hard as you should.
When I was at Promax, this conference, I ran into a lot of young writer, producer, editors from around the world, really. And some people, some of the conversations I heard, some people working on projects that they don't really enjoy. I feel like at NBC, there's so many properties to work on that are so exciting to cut. All the resources are there. What do you tell people who are in the Bay right now working on things they're not so much excited about in terms of properties? And how do they cut something that's good with that in mind?
Well, you know, we work in marketing, and marketing is about adding value. And it's, you know, sometimes you are blessed to work on great shows that you would watch anyway, even if you, you know, didn't work at that place. You know, when I first started here, we had shows like Cheers and then Seinfeld and Frasier and Friends. And those were shows that, you know, it was fun to work on them and to work with the producers. And you know, it was a plum gig. For whatever reason, I seemed to attract the less well-regarded shows. They liked to pair me with things that were ultimately going to crash and burn. We had a sitcom called Emeril for a while that was, it wasn't a really very good idea because you wouldn't think that a sitcom that stars the famous chef Emeril Lagasse would be a funny show, and sure enough, it wasn't, but I was on that. I've worked on many shows that were just destined to flame out. And it was almost like a compliment for me, because if they give you a job that not everybody else can do, then that's your opportunity to make your mark. And I think that's what we do as marketers, is we add value. The more you can add to something, I think the better your contribution to the success of that thing. So in that sense, I kind of, when I'm in the Bay or in my office and I'm talking to somebody who's working on stuff, I sometimes pull that line out. I'll probably, you know, I'll likely say, you know, you are able, not everybody can make the show look good. You're going to make it look good because you're just that good. And I think that is kind of, you know, it's really cuts to the heart of what we do, is to find a reason for people to like something. And like I said, if it were easy, everybody could do it, but that's why you're doing it.
My follow-up question was going to be about that. You spoke one time about the beauty of promos is to make them emotional. If you want to make something good, make it emotional. Do you think that skill is innate? So for example, there's a promo pathway program that I was a part of, and there's so many other programs out there that are not there's not so many other, but they're teaching you how to cut promos. Do you think it's sort of you're born with this ability to create emotional work that can touch viewers, promos that touch viewers? Or do you think that when we start working for a Ron Hayes or any director of promos, or do we then nurture those skills, or is it something innate in someone that knows how to tell a good story? Do we have a chance to learn?
I think, as with all things, I think your combination of the sort of innate things that you're born with, the skill set or the genes, or, you know, maybe it's a function of the upbringing, that you're, you know, you just have a particular sense of humor or sense of irony or a sense of emotion. And, you know, I do think that anybody can get better and anybody can sort of learn to be more in touch with their emotions. I think that's kind of a large part of what we do, is we, you know, as we're crafting a message, we try it out on ourselves. And if we get that little tingle or that little, you know, lump in the throat or that little, or if we just laugh, then, you know, maybe it'll work that way on somebody else. Usually it will, because usually I think that, you know, there's a commonality of emotion and experience that we all kind of share. And that's the reason why we tend to like a lot of the same things. I guess a little less nowadays, where there's so many niches and so many particular audiences for things. But it really does come down to, I think, being able to monitor your own sort of emotional and physical reactions to things, and then also being able to kind of know what buttons are going to elicit those feelings in other people.
I had a question about the emotional work and eliciting those feelings. This may be a trade secret. You may not be able to answer this, but I'm going to ask you. Is there a secret to doing that? Is there a formula to creating that kind of work that hits? And if you tell us this, would allow us to win more awards, to be more likely to be promoted, more likely to create work that actually makes an impact.
As with anything, there's no kind of magic bullet to anything. Everybody who does this has, over the course of their career, sort of develops and improves a bag of tricks, a set of skills, abilities. And I think there are as many tricks as there are, processes, or there are as many tricks as there are kind of ways that you want people to feel. Generally speaking, you know, you want people to get a sense of what the show is, or at least what you want the show to be, or you want them to think that the show is going to be, so that the biggest number of people are gonna watch it. And I think there's one word that sums it all up for me, and that's storytelling. you know, I think we all in this business are storytellers to a certain extent. And so I think learning how to tell a story in 15 seconds, learning kind of what are the essential elements in the story, how to tell it in a pithy way, given kind of what you have, whether you're using sound bites or whether it's copy or whether it's music, or usually it's all of the above and more. You know, all of those are sort of the elements that we use to craft, you know, a good spot and tell a story.
Do you ask questions? So you, for instance, when I walked in, it looked like you were viewing some work that maybe someone cut. I could be wrong, but it looked like it. So when you're looking at work that someone cut, are you asking a list of questions? Are you ticking a box? Yes, it has this. It has laughter. Okay, boom. It hits those 3 points. We know it works. Beginning, middle, and end. First, second, third act, intro, body, conclusion. Is there a pattern to things that just work?
I think the first thing that I do when I see a spot is I ask myself if it worked on me, and usually I know that fairly quickly. The second question I ask is, you know, what was working and what wasn't working, and was there an impediment to it working as well as it could have worked? What was hanging me up? What was not quite allowing that message to seal the deal? I think that there is, you referenced a list of things to check off. When the way we do marketing here at NBC, we usually, before we cut anything, we kind of take a step back and try to kind of figure out what we want people to know about the show and how we're going to speak to the audience about that. We talk a lot about which audience we're going to speak to, because audiences now, you know, are so fragmented, and you know, you could have a show that is called a hit, and maybe 2% of your target audience of 18 to 49 are even watching the show. That means 98% of your target audience is not watching the show, and it's a hit, and you know, relatively speaking. So you know, then it becomes very important who you're speaking to, because who your likely viewers are and who your unlikely viewers are, and then identifying them and sort of saying, okay, well, to this audience, we're going to say X. For another audience, that message may not work. So you need to kind of adjust it so that you're saying the right thing to the right people. I mean, we all do this sort of intuitively in our everyday lives. When we're talking to our boss, we may have one tone or one message. When we're talking to some of our family, we may have a different way of speaking. And I think that we need to, as much as possible, be saying the right thing to the right viewer. So when somebody comes in with a spot and it's a good spot, the next question I may have to ask is who, you know, which of the buckets, or, you know, who is this for, and is it persuasive to that particular viewer? Because some, you know, it may be, it may not be. Maybe a perfectly great spot that just isn't going to work with the audience that we need.
How many spots do you push out weekly?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think what's interesting is that I kind of know the answer, because I get that answer every week. It's between, I would say, about a low would be about 300 and a high would be about 600. And it's not that they're necessarily all different creative. You know, sometimes we, you know, these days, you, with placing things on digital, sometimes you might deliver a spot in, you know, a half a dozen or a dozen or more different formats, because you may need to crop it in a square format for social media. You may need to put some sort of cross promotional tag on it. You know, there's a lot of sort of different customizations that we do, but we see a lot of stuff. We make a lot of product here.
Were you ever an editor?
No, I started out in a union shop, and I worked with editors, and then I moved to NBC, and the editors, we did offline editing on tape in both places, actually, KCAP and here. And back then, they used to be on these CMX computer editor systems. And so after that, I became a manager, a creative director. And so there was no need for me to learn how to edit, because I had other people who were doing it. And so I'm terrible at iMovie. I'm not a guy you would want to edit your home movies, because, you know, it's just not a skill that I have. That said, I think I am an editor in the sense that I kind of am probably better than average at knowing, you know, what elements will work together to make a promo.
What route do you take say you're a writer, producer, editor right now, or maybe you're not even yet in the business. Maybe you're thinking about it. What route do you take? Is there a path that you take to where you say, I want to go into management, but I want to work in creative? Do you make that distinction yourself, or do you kind of go with your gut as your career sort of flows and you make decision by decision by decision, and you happen to be EVP of a network? Does it work that way?
You know, I think for me, it worked the following way. I got a job my first job was writing copy for bumpers when somebody was on maternity leave. And I just tried to do the very best job I could do at that. You know, I think as with all things, the fundamental reason why anybody in the world would want to give you a job is because you can solve problems for them. You can make the problems go away. And that is what I would focus on doing, so that my boss could do their job better and, you know, my stuff was taken care of. And so I think, you know, how does that relate with your question? I think you try to do your very, very best to make the problems go away, to do the very best job that you can. And then the opportunities kind of come, you know, up. You know, there's people leave, jobs open up, in, you know, either where you're working or in other places, and you hope that you have done a good enough job at polishing your own personal brand that the people deciding who get that job have, you know, consider you a worthwhile candidate, and you hopefully get that job, and then you do it well enough that they're glad that they gave you that job, and then it makes it easier next time when another position is open, or, you know, if they want to keep you and they need to offer you something, that, you know, you kind of can make the next transition. You know, if you want to be a creative, then you hopefully are lucky enough to find a job that is in that area. If you want to manage creatives, I think you have to have been a really, really pretty decent creative. You know, nobody is, to my knowledge, has ever said, oh, well, you know, you're a really good manager. You went to Wharton Business School. You seem very qualified. Here's my promo department to run. No, nobody's done that, to my knowledge, ever in the history of, you know, what we do. It's really more, are you a good creative and, how can I say, not crazy, fairly responsible, like the person I can kind of trust with this thing? You know, maybe... You know, one of the things I think about being a manager is that you have to be about helping everybody else around you, you know, you find success, about setting them up to succeed. And so I think part that to me is job one of being a good creative manager is collaborating with people and helping to bring out the best in them, or helping them to bring out the best in themselves. And then if you can do that and you don't have a pathological need to take credit for all of their work, that you can let them, you know, revel in the satisfaction of a job well done, which I think is kind of primarily what we all want. We all just want to really do a really great job. If you can do that, then I think you will have positioned yourself to be a good creative director and a good manager. And I think that's kind of, you know, they're very, very related, but kind of separate skills. And you have to learn to be good at both of them. I'm lucky I've been around for a very long time, and I've made every mistake that I could possibly have made. And so maybe that's a few less mistakes that I will make now because I've already made them.
Last question in closing is, you've been at NBC for nearly 30 years, almost.
Yeah, like 27.
You've had this illustrious career where you've worked on these prolific campaigns like Seinfeld and, I mean, everything that you've worked on up to this point, and you've seen a lot of productions. How do you maintain the passion that you have for this and the eye that you have for this? And then also, are you working on anything cool right now?
You know, projects come and projects go. And it's always interesting to kind of look back and say, what was I working on when? Because it all now seems so far away. And yet, I will tell you that today I feel more engaged and more excited and more enthusiastic about everything that I do than probably at any point in the last 27 years or 32 years. And the reason for that is, I think, maybe because I'm at a higher level now and there's more at stake. So if I screw up a campaign, then it's on me. You know, if nobody tunes in, you know, all they know about the show is kind of what I put out for them. And if I didn't do that good of a job, then, you know, I kind of participate in the, you know, in the failure. And conversely, if things go well, then I feel really, really good about, you know, the fact that we, you know, that we did do well. And it is more emotional on both ends. And the level of fear and conquest is really exciting and engaging. And so I think that, listen, when I started in this business, you'd hand a tape to a writer producer, they'd make a spot, you'd put it on the air, and first of all, everybody'd see it because a third of the country was watching Cheers at the time. Now the audiences are so relatively small, and you have to customize your message and put it out for people who really just want to be on their phone all the time. And so it's become a harder challenge than it's ever been. And whenever things are harder, they are also, I think, more rewarding and more exciting. And so in that way, I think entertainment marketing has just gotten more and more exciting. You have to, you have to stay on top of a lot more. You have to, it's a lot more forensic. You know, you have to think about it in a more systematic way, but yet also keep it creative and fresh and entertaining. It is harder, but it's also more exciting and more fun. So I don't know if that answers your question, your first question. The second question was about if I'm working on anything cool right now. And, it's like I've got my game face on for everything that we work on. So in my mind, it's all cool. And, I'm not going to tell you that any of my shows that we're working on right now are not cool. They're all cool. We love all our children equally. Will and Grace is cool on a very personal level for me, because when I launched the show, whenever it was 17 years ago, I was quite a lot younger than I am now. You were also younger, not two, but you were younger. And so it was exciting then, because number one, it was the best pilot that I think to this day, it might be the best pilot I've ever seen. And it was satisfying that, on a number of different levels that it did as well as it did. It went on to a very kind of illustrious run on NBC. And then bringing it back and working with the same people again is really exciting and satisfying, and also terrifying, wondering if a show with such expectations and such a reputation can work in the current day. It's always, you never know 100%, nothing's too big to fail, but we have a reasonable amount of enthusiasm that this is going to succeed, and we're really excited about it, and it's a really fun opportunity to reboot something that, we booted, we put out the first time. So that to me is cool, but everything else is cool. When you work in marketing, you have to find the cool. It's in there. You have to pull it out and show it to everybody and have them all nod and go, oh yeah, that is totally cool.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate LaCaire-Marion and social media coordinator Kristen Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A, follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack, follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. Subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.